Okay, let's set the scene. It's the final chaotic months of World War II. The fighting's winding down, but a different kind of hunt is just kicking off.
Right, not for territory this time.
No, exactly. It was a hunt for expertise, for the scientific minds, really, behind the Axis war machine. We're talking mostly Germany, but Japan too, to some extent.
Yeah, and as the conflict officially ended, the Allies, specifically the US and the Soviet Union, they realized pretty fast just how valuable this knowledge was, the cutting-edge stuff that powered the Third Reich's technology.
It wasn't just about wrapping up the war. It was about, well, controlling the future, technologically speak.
Absolutely. And that leads straight into a really difficult question, a moral tightrope, you could say.
It really does. Think about this. What if someone's past was incredibly dark, controversial, maybe even directly linked to, horrific war crimes? Could you or should you overlook that, maybe even actively hide it? Because their knowledge might give your nation a critical edge.
That's the core of it, isn't it? National security, technological progress versus these profound moral lines. How far is too far?
Do the ends justify the means? It's that classic uncomfortable dilemma.
Yeah.
And this whole question, it's right at the heart of a top secret and frankly, deeply controversial U.S. program. Some documents call it Project Paperclip, but we mostly know it as Operation Paperclip.
That's the one.
So for this deep dive, we're going to unpack that. How and why did the U.S. government do this? What were the motivations for all the secrecy?
And who were these scientists? Some really remarkable achievements came out of this, but tied to some very problematic individuals.
Exactly. We'll look at specific people, their contributions, and then grapple with why Operation Paperclip is still such a complex moral debate today.
It's a story that really mixes scientific ambition, Cold War fear, and a huge ethical compromise. It shaped decades of technology.
Okay, so let's dig into the origins. It starts back in what, late 1944. Allied forces are pushing across Europe.
Right. And embedded with the troops, you had these small, specialized teams, scientific intelligence
Their
officers.
first job was pretty straightforward, wasn't it? Grab the advanced weapons.
Yeah, find and secure the Reich's tech biological weapons, chemical agents, V2 rockets, that sort of thing, before they could be destroyed or worse, fall into Soviet hands, like a salvage operation for Nazi science.
But they quickly realized the hardware wasn't the whole story.
Not at all. The weapons
No.
were one thing, but the brains behind them, that was the real prize.
Ah.
So the mission shifted. It went from just grabbing rockets to actively recruiting the top Nazi doctors, physicists, chemists, the people who actually created this stuff.
And then came this almost unbelievable discovery, the Ozenberg list. How did that happen? It sounds like something out of a spy novel.
It really does. And the story's kind of wild. Werner Ozenberg, he was a top engineer, head of the Defense Research Association.
Okay.
He compiled this list basically to pull essential scientists back from the front lines and get them working on military research again. It was a who's who of German scientific talent.
And how did the Allies get it?
Get this. A Polish scientist found scraps of the list stuffed down a toilet at Bonn University.
Seriously, in a toilet.
Yep, stuffed in a toilet. Those scraps then made their way via MI6 to US intelligence.
Wow. So this list found in a bathroom became like the roadmap for recruitment.
Pretty much. It gave them names, expertise. It was an intelligence gold mine, like finding the keys to the kingdom, technologically speaking.
Incredible. So armed with this list, the program starts, but not initially as Paperclip, right?
Correct. The first code name was Operation Overcast, and its initial goal was narrow: get German science and scientists to help finish the war against Japan. Their work was deemed vital for the national interest.
But then Japan surrendered.
And everything changed. The race was on. Suddenly, it wasn't just about beating Japan. It was about beating the Soviets, the French, the British to these German mines. The competition got fierce.
The Cold War casting its shadow already.
Absolutely. That pressure, the fear of the Soviets getting ahead, is what pushed President Truman to officially authorize Operation Paperclip on September 3rd, 1946.
And that directive, SWNCC 25722, that formally allowed the military to bring over these rare chosen mines.
Yes, from Germany and Austria. It made it official policy.
But Truman included a really important condition, didn't he? One that became, well, a major issue.
He did. He was very clear. No active members of the Nazi Party, especially anyone implicated in war crimes. That was the rule.
But it wasn't followed.
Not really. Officials at the Joint Intelligence Objectives Agency, JIOA, and the OSS, which later became the CIA,
they
basically ignored it.
How do you just ignore a presidential directive like that?
They whitewashed the records. They actively destroyed or altered files to hide incriminating evidence, evidence of Nazi affiliations, potential war crimes.
They literally rewrote history for these guys.
Yeah.
What was the justification internally? Surely someone must have pushed back.
The justification was pure national security. The argument was, we need this intelligence. It's crucial for the post-war world, crucial to stay ahead of the Soviets. The perceived threat from the USSR was immense, and it often overrode ethical concerns or even direct orders.
And they ran a kind of propaganda campaign, too, right, to sell this internally and eventually to the public.
Yes, arguing that their intelligence was vital, essential. Plus, you have to understand, reaching the top in Nazi science often meant towing the party line. It wasn't just about being smart. It often implied ideological buy-in.
That's a chilling level of calculation. Bypassing the president, hiding war crimes, all in the name of security.
It sets the stage for the immense impact these scientists would have, but also the deep controversy.
Okay, let's talk about some of these individuals. The most famous and maybe the most morally complicated has to be Wernher von Braun.
Without a doubt. His past is stark. He was a member of the Nazi Party, an officer in the SS. He was the technical director at Peenemünde, the place where they developed the V-2 rocket.
Hitler's vengeance weapon, the first long-range ballistic missile. Terrifying tech. And the human cost wasn't just in the cities it hit.
No, tragically, far more people died building the V-2s than were killed by them. Over 20,000 slave laborers forced to work in horrific conditions.
And von Braun knew about this. He was involved.
He was deeply implicated. There's evidence he visited concentration camps like Buchenwald to personally select laborers. He absolutely knew about the conditions at the underground metalwork factory. His complicity is pretty well documented.
Yet this same man becomes a central figure in the American space program. It's jarring.
It is. He was brought over in 1945 as a War Department special employee, first at Fort Bliss, Texas. Then he led the Army Ballistic Missile Agency in Huntsville, Alabama.
And his team developed crucial early missiles for the U.S. military.
Yes. The Nike Ajax, the Redstone missile, which could carry a nuclear warhead. Then came Sputnik in 57.
The big shock from the Soviets.
Exactly. And suddenly, von Braun and his team were absolutely essential. They helped launch America's first satellite, Explorer I, just months later.
And then he moves to NASA.
In 1960, yeah. Director of the Marshall Space Flight Center, he becomes the chief architect of the Saturn V rocket.
The moon rocket. The only vehicle to ever take humans beyond low Earth orbit. An incredible feat of engineering.
Undeniably. And he became a public figure, too, working with Walt Disney on shows like Man in Space. He even got the National Medal of Science.
A national hero with an incredibly dark past. It's hard to reconcile.
And he wasn't the only one with that kind of duality. Take Hubertus Strahold.
The father of space medicine, as he's sometimes called.
Yeah, though that title is hugely controversial now. He was a top Luftwaffe doctor, but he was accused of being involved in truly horrific experiments on prisoners at Dachau concentration camp.
Experiments involving air pressure, freezing, awful stuff.
Just horrific. Yet he comes to the U.S. in 47, works for the Air Force, and essentially pioneers the field of space medicine, studying how spaceflight affects the human body.
Work that was vital for astronaut safety. For the suits, life support in Gemini and Apollo.
Absolutely critical. But his past eventually caught up with him. When the details of the Dachau experiments came out more widely, his reputation was ruined. An award named after him was retired in 2013. It's another stark example of the paperclip compromise.
And there are others, maybe less famous, but whose work impacts us even today.
Definitely. Hans K. Ziegler, brought over in 47, he was all about solar power for satellites. His work led to Project Vanguard, the first solar-powered satellite, Vanguard 1. It transmitted for 7 years, and he worked on SCORE, the very first communication satellite.
Wow. Solar panels on satellites, we just take that for granted now.
Exactly. Or Kurt Luhovec. He invented something called the PN junction.
What's that?
It's fundamental. It's the basic idea that makes transistors and integrated circuits work. Without it, you don't get modern electronics. You don't get the device you're probably listening to this on. He was also key in developing the first LEDs.
Light-emitting diodes. Lights and everything now.
Yep. That was Luhovec. Then there's Fritz Karl Prechtschat. Interesting story captured by the Soviets first, then came to the U.S. via paperclip in 57.
And he invented
the dot matrix printer. He actually filed patents while still in Germany. He also worked on aircraft line landing systems, satellite tech, even early regenerative braking for hybrid cars. Way ahead of his time on that.
Regenerative braking back then. Wow. And Anton Fletner?
He designed the Fletner FL-282 helicopter, the Colibri, during the war, arguably the first mass-produced helicopter. In the U.S., he worked for Kaman Aircraft, designed the HH-43 Husky helicopter, famous from Vietnam.
Okay.
And he also worked on rotor sails for ships, those big spinning cylinders that use wind for propulsion. Again, thinking about efficiency decades ago.
Finally, Heinz Haber, another complex figure.
Yeah, former SS member, did military research. In the U.S., he worked on space medicine, too, but he's maybe better known for popularizing science in the 50s.
Like Von Braun with Disney?
Exactly. He consulted on and presented shows like Our Friend the Atom, co-hosted Man in Space with Von Braun. He really helped shape public understanding and acceptance of things like nuclear power and space exploration.
So you put all this together, and you see this massive influx of expertise, particularly in rocketry. And this happens just as the Cold War is heating up.
Precisely. That context is crucial. Rockets weren't just for space exploration. They were becoming central to national defense. They were the delivery systems for nuclear weapons. Nuclear deterrence rested on having better rockets than the other side.
So the space race and the arms race were completely intertwined.
Absolutely. And the pressure ramped up incredibly after the Soviets launched Sputnik and then put Yuri Gagarin in space first. For many in the U.S. government, that pressure seemed to justify any means necessary to catch up and pull ahead, including Operation Paperclip.
Which is why it remains one of the most debated, most controversial government programs ever. It's seen as this real double-edged sword.
Totally. On one side, you have the argument that it was a necessary evil.
Right, that America needed that technological edge over the Soviets. And you can't deny the results.
Right.
The moon landing, sure, but also tons of spin-off tech.
Things we use every day, advanced materials like memory foam, medical breakthroughs like pacemakers, kidney dialysis, CAT scans, MRI scanners. A lot of that traces back to research spurred by the space race, which paperclip fueled.
And importantly, it kept that knowledge out of Soviet hands. That was a huge driver.
Massive driver. But the other edge of the sword is the ethical cost, which was severe.
Because despite Truman's order, many of these scientists had truly horrifying Nazi pasts, direct links to atrocities.
We mentioned von Braun's link to slave labor. Then there's Arthur Rudolph. He was accused of essentially organizing the forced labor at the Mittelwerk V2 factory, where thousands died. He eventually gave up his U.S. citizenship rather than face prosecution.
And Walter Schreiber, linked to experiments at Ravensbrück concentration camp.
Yeah, and when his past started coming out, the JIOA actually helped him flee to Argentina to avoid public outcry and accountability.
So a lack of accountability is a major criticism.
Huge. Most of these individuals, including von Braun, were never formally tried for their actions during the war, even with strong evidence. The Office of Special Investigations, the OSI, was set up later to look into Nazi war criminals in the U.S., but very few paperclip scientists face prosecution. George Rickey was tried, but acquitted.
It forces you to confront this really uncomfortable trade-off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Incredible technological leaps for the U.S., achieved by deliberately overlooking, covering up, essentially pardoning people involved in horrific crimes against humanity.
It's a stark picture. National security and scientific progress achieved through profound moral compromise. Paperclip really embodies that tension.
It's a powerful and honestly quite disturbing example of where those lines can blur.
Yeah, the legacy is complicated. Progress often has a cost, and paperclip shows that cost can sometimes be incredibly high, ethically speaking.
So as we wrap up this look at Operation Paperclip, this extraordinary and, let's face it, deeply unsettling story, we want to leave you with a thought. It's a rhetorical question, really, something to ponder. Do you think it's fair to call Operation Paperclip a moral dilemma?
There really are no easy answers there.
None at all. But it highlights the importance, always, of considering the true costs of progress, even when that progress leads to achievements like walking on the moon. It's something worth thinking about.